Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave, the Caregivers Caregiver Radio Program on Health Star Worldwide, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grieving process. They say that there are only three types of people in the world: those who are caregivers, those who will become caregivers, and those who will someday need a caregiver. Join Dave and his guests now and every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific on Health Star Worldwide as they share practice tips and tools that you can start using immediately to help get you through this day so you can live your caregiver life more fully and abundantly. Now, here's your caregiver host, Dave Nassani.
Hey, from Los Angeles, a big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land, and especially on our new platform blog. I'm Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, coming to you live globally from the famous Health Star Worldwide Radio Network. And yes, folks, I am the guy, and I'm going to help you, and I'm going to guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we are going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. We have an exciting show planned for you today. Adrian Gruberg, who's normally my co-host, is going to be my guest and my co-host. So that means she's going to talk to herself. Founder of the Caregiver Space with over 142,000 caregivers following her. She's going to take your calls today. And if you're new to the show, and we get many new listeners now every week, especially because of Blab, I'm your host, Dave Nassani, and this show is the caregivers of every single kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are prone. Well, first, let me tell you, they're very caring. They're very selfless. They're very sacrificial. Just all around great people, right? Oh, yeah. But because of that, they're also very prone to burnout. And they let people take advantage of them and stuff like that. Because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own, right? We also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects it have on us. It automatically throws us into this other thing called the grieving process. Ouch. And unfortunately, folks, there is only one way out of the grieving process. You have to go through the grieving process. There's no shortcuts. Can't go around it. Can't go over it. Can't go under it. Got to go through it. Sorry. But if you happen to feel like you're kind of stuck through grief or loss or burnout, then stay tuned because we're going to talk about all that stuff. I want to thank my last week's guest, caregiver Diane Sagan and Dr. Hermanowitz. You can hear that interview on podcasts. Everything here is recorded. Just go to my website, caregiverscaregiver.com, and you will be able to hear all of them. All right, enough of that. Adrian, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for agreeing to be my guest and my co-host today. Take a minute or two and introduce yourself for those who have never seen you before, which I can't even believe that's possible, but it's possible. Tell us who you are, Adrian, for those
who don't know. I founded the Caregiver Space after caring for my husband for 6 years when he was diagnosed with cancer. And then his mother, who came to live with us about 2 years later, for 3 years. At 89, she was diagnosed with lymphoma, and we didn't want to see her living on her own, so she came to live with us. Through that experience and my time with support groups online, I decided that I wanted to form a caregiver network, so to speak, and that's what I did. About a year after he passed, we were just about ready to go up with it. This Saturday will be 5 years, and it's hard to believe.
Wow. Time flies when you're having fun, huh?
Yeah. But I've accomplished.
Yes. And June, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is June Roca. I am a health coach now, but I want to talk about and share with you my caregiving experience before.
Okay. Go right ahead. You have the floor.
Can I start with what do you want me to talk about? Because I have many different kinds of.
Well, Adrian used to be a caregiver. I'm still a caregiver. And we were going to call this show, what do you do when you're no longer a caregiver? Because a lot of people just don't know what to do. You know, they're kind of lost. Their identity was in what they did instead of who they are inside. And it's a tough transition. You know, some people just go into depression, go into grief, stay in bed, don't get out of bed, don't, you know, get out of their pajamas, don't bathe, don't eat, and, you know, into a downward spiral. And, you know, we don't want that to happen to people. Others, because they don't know what else to do, they'll just start volunteering at the senior center because it's like, oh, I have to be a caregiver. I have to care.
It's there.
You know, and that may be good. That may be bad. We don't know. It just depends on, you know, what you're supposed to do, who you are, and what you're called to do in your destiny. So you used to be a caregiver, right?
Right.
Why don't you tell us how did you stop becoming a caregiver? And if you ever went through some of those lonely, anxiousness, depression, searching for your identity, you know, was it all wrapped up in your caregiver? Now, you were a professional caregiver or a family caregiver?
The professional one.
Okay, so that's interesting. So you see, a lot of people don't think that professional caregivers go through the same thing that us family caregivers go through, but that's not true, isn't it? Because there are many great caregivers out there, and the Filipino population, which I'm assuming you're Filipino, has a great history of caregiving. I mean, you go to the senior center and, man, Filipino caregivers everywhere, and they're wonderful, wonderful, caring, empathetic people just by nature. They're wired that way. So, what I was going to say is that when you have someone who's genuine like that and they're a paid caregiver, they really care for these people that like it was their mother. So if there's a problem, they suffer from all the same things that a family caregiver suffers from because they are the genuine thing. Now, there are some professional caregivers out there who I wouldn't let them care for my cat because they're just in it for the money. And so, you know what, I'm sure you've seen some of those, June. So go ahead. I'm talking too much. I'll let you talk now.
My mom was a caregiver. My sister also became a caregiver. And now now I'm a health coach, but before I was also a caregiver. How it all started was my mom was caring for this old guy. And this old guy did not want anyone to care for him other than my mom's family. So my mom started calling each one of us. So I'm off tomorrow.
That's common.
Can you please do this? And I don't know how to do it. I'll write it all down. So she used to write down everything that we have to do to be able to do this. So... and this guy became part of our family. We bring our relatives there whenever he's got a birthday. He doesn't have any family. So we became his family.
Oh,
he died, but before he died, we had a good time.
That's very generous. You know, and he really trusted you guys.
Oh, yeah. But a caregiver really is someone who wanted to make someone healthy. And if a caregiver is not healthy, how can he give that? Or she, how can I give that to someone? And if I don't know what being healthy means, how can I even make sense of what I'm doing other than receiving that money that I get? You see. So the first thing I did after I got out of caregiving was study health coaching because I want to know what health is. Because at that time that I was caregiving, I was doing it using common sense, and we have training also. So the theory side plus the practical side but what helped me really was our training at home in the Philippines. Hmm. We used to care for our grandmother.
Yep.
And we used to assist them. And so it's just like a cultural caregiving community we are in.
Yes. Yeah. Well, go backwards a little bit. Tell us how you stopped becoming a caregiver.
Okay. I almost did not want to talk about it, but...
We talk about everything here. Sorry.
I saw...
Just you and me.
Yeah. I saw this old woman who has Alzheimer's. she was assigned to a male caregiver because she is tall and she needs a lot of care getting up.
So she needed someone who had the physical ability to care for her.
Right, and the physical strength. And yes, of course, not many women can do that. So I was there having to care for someone else. So I witness what's going on. And this lady, because she has Alzheimer's, cannot understand most of the things that this caregiver is telling her anyway. Mm-hmm. Second is that she just does what she wants to do. She will get up or walk, even if she is a little bit unbalanced because her bones are now crooked, mm-hmm. right? So she can fall anytime.
Yeah.
The caregiver will be blamed if she falls. Now, if she constantly do that, the caregiver will have a very hard time because she will be exposing herself to injury all the time. Mm-hmm. So what?
So is he not doing his job properly, or being overly cruel, or not? You know.
I can just say that there are rules that was violated there. So it was very difficult for me to witness that.
See, this is how caregivers are. This woman wasn't even her caregiver, and yet she's just observing out of the corner of her eye that she's being mistreated, and she feels terrible. And that is what makes a caregiver, the empathy, the sympathy, the any comment on that, Adrian? I don't know why Filipinos make good caregivers.
No, to some people, part of it's cultural, respect for elders, which we don't have so much in this country, unfortunately. It's very much cultural. Yeah. But I mean, there are lots of people like this woman who really don't want to. They're in denial. They don't want to accept the fact that they need care. Hmm. You know, they just do what they want to do.
You're talking about the Alzheimer's patient.
I'm talking about the woman that the gentleman was taking care of, who kept falling, who was putting herself in danger.
Well, of course, if you have Alzheimer's, you know, who knows what they're aware of.
Yeah. Do you feel that he was at fault or she was at fault?
Well, you cannot get the Alzheimer's lady, the lady with Alzheimer's at fault, because her mind just left her, meaning she's not in her right mind mm-hmm. because of this disease.
Of course.
So I guess the children should be able to care for her, I would suppose.
At least monitoring her at the facility.
Or monitor that.
And have interaction with the caregivers so that if the gentleman was having problems controlling her, he should be talking to the children.
Yeah, and they should be popping in unexpected, unannounced, so that they, you know, might see what's going on, you know?
Right.
But do you happen to know if the kids were visiting frequently or hardly ever, or you don't know?
Hardly ever. They would just leave them there because even if they come, she wouldn't recognize them anyway. And that is one of the realities that I have witnessed.
So sad. The caregiver becomes their child, in essence, you know. Hmm. Especially if Alzheimer's, they may actually believe that.
They don't even have an awareness of who they are or what they're doing, you know. The mind just, some of the nerve cells, I think, just die after a while. So then you get Alzheimer's, but
I know this isn't the topic of our conversation, but I really believe that there needs to be some kind of mercy. What's the word, Adrian? When somebody just wants to die, you know, well, and they've lost their...
How do they know if they want to die if
they
don't even know who they are?
Yeah.
Yeah, and because they may not be in their right mind, they can't make that decision.
And yeah, but they will never get in their right mind because
there are no directives in this country.
It's sad. I just hate to see people like that who are just declining, and you know, some, and all they are is dollar signs to a lot of facilities. You know, mm-hmm. they don't care what kind of shape they're in. We'll take care of them. They don't care how they take care of them. I just think it would be more better, if that's a word.
Humane.
Thank you. I mean, we do it to animals. Why can't we do it to our loved ones?
But
another topic for another discussion. And
yeah, it's not. It's tantamount to murder at this point.
So what did you do? You quit, I assume.
I did. I told.
Did they ask you why you're quitting?
Yes, of course. I mean, I wrote them a letter, really, a long letter, telling them what I saw. And I said, if you will change this situation, I will stay. But if not, I said, I'm going to go because something is not right. Mm. And so I did leave. And then I got...
That's when they didn't change.
Well, they have to, though, because when a caregiver like that comes out in the open, just like me, they will be alarmed and they will, like, really. That's the reason also why I took that risk of writing them a letter. I didn't know what will happen to me or whether I'll have another job after that, really. Yeah. It was like suicide for me because I have bills to pay, you know, at that time. But what is interesting to note there is, why is it that only when there is something like this happening that we look at how everyone is doing with these patients? Why not every day the owner of the facility or the administrator just going there and really finding out?
Finding good, caring help, really caring help, is such an enormous problem, and it's only going to get worse because there are so many people. I mean, the baby boomer business, we're getting older, we'll end up living longer, having more problems,
And society is getting more selfish.
And society is getting more selfish. And the family has a very painful time when their mother doesn't recognize them anymore. It hurts.
Yeah.
Now, some people can deal with it and grow with that and have a good relationship, accepting the fact that, okay, I'm going to go visit my mother, even if she doesn't know who I am anymore.
Yeah. Adrian, why should kids continue to visit their parents who maybe have Alzheimer's or dementia and they're in a facility when they don't even know they're there visiting them? Why should they? Tell me. Because they're asking themselves these questions.
I know they are. I just think that it's part of living, part of caring for someone who cared for you. When I was an infant, my mother, I didn't know my mother's name, you know, but she cared for me before I was sentient, really, you know.
Yeah.
It's just something that I can't understand how people cannot do it.
Yeah.
So I'm coming from a very different place.
I understand. It's so sad. You know, my mother had dementia and Alzheimer's, and me and my sister were really the only ones visiting her. My brother, he would maybe once every 6 weeks because he was further away. But my sister would call me frustrated, and she'd say, "You know, Mom didn't even know who I was," because up till that point, she did. You know,
yes.
Acknowledge the visit. She says, "I drove an hour down here, you know, and I sacrificed this and I sacrificed that." And I says, "Marie," I said, "What would you want if you were stuck in a facility?"
Right.
You know. So, she got over it. She was just having a hissy fit, you know. But she did finally pass away, and we were grateful that she did, because she lived a good life and she had a wonderful funeral. Listen, we're going to take a short break, and then I would like you, June, to just go into what my original question. Sorry, it took so much to set up that question. But how did you feel after you quit? Did you go back into caregiving, et cetera? So we'll be right back. Don't go away.
Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and tune in to Dave, the Caregivers Caregiver Radio Program on HealthStar Worldwide, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grieving process. With roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, it's about one-third of the population. That means everybody probably knows somebody caring for a loved one. They say that there are only three types of people in the world: those who are caregivers, those who will become caregivers, and those who will someday need a caregiver. Mothers of special needs children, family members caring for elderly parents, spouses, siblings, or friends caring for disabilities such as Alzheimer's, dementia, cancer, stroke, heart disease, diabetes, muscular dystrophy, AIDS, autoimmune diseases. The list goes on. Join Dave and his guests every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific on HealthStar Worldwide as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. You'll start feeling better in no time as you begin to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to help you get through the day and to live life more fully and abundantly.
We're back with Adrian Gruberg, and we have a call-in, June, on the line, who was a professional caregiver and saw some things she didn't like down there, so she quit. Gave them an opportunity to change, but I guess they didn't. So we're talking about when you're no longer a caregiver with Adrian. So June, did you feel any of those things that I mentioned about after you quit? I mean, did you go into like a week of depression, or tell us what you were feeling?
I was a little bit, frustrated that about the system, you see, and I can't get out of caregiving at that time because that was my source of income. Mm-hmm. And so I have a dilemma, either to get back into it or find another way of surviving. So I actually got into it again with another woman who is it's a private kind of caregiving, where I lived with her. And it was like a companion. I was like a companion.
Yeah.
So we enjoyed ourselves together because I cook food for her. And when she's watching TV, I would watch TV and we would talk about things, you know, mm-hmm. what she's watching. So it was an easy kind of job. And it paid me a lot. She paid me a lot of money too. So it was really a good time. I had a good time.
All things work for good.
So,
what are you doing now? Are you still caregiving or no more?
Let me first backtrack a bit because this will contribute to what we're talking about. After that, I actually had cancer.
Oh my gosh.
So I have to care for myself. I was diagnosed with cancer in the middle of healthy eating. I was a raw vegan at that time. I'm 29 years vegetarian. And then when I became raw vegan, which is mostly salads and that.
Are you saying raw vegan?
Yeah, like surviving is just salads.
Right.
No meat. And I refused chemotherapy and radiation because I know my body cannot.
What stage was it? Was it stage 1, 2, 3, 4?
I was face to face with death. So I literally took care of me, became my savior. Because I don't know if someone's going to be in the other side who's going to save me. So I really have to come to grips with being my savior so that if he isn't there, or even if he will be or not be there, I will be my own savior. So this is, for me, real caregiving. Because that care you cannot get anywhere but from yourself. So that self-intimacy and self-loving yourself unconditionally is, for me, at the heart of everything. Because if you have that, you can give that to others. So after that, I got married, which I didn't expect, because at that time I just had enough of men, you know. I just said no more. And because at that time when I had cancer, my husband at that time cheated, right? And I was left without a job, without a husband, without
work. He cheated on you?
Of course he did. I mean, what will he do with me when I'm already sick with cancer? I mean, so
I guess all Filipinos aren't compassionate and caring and loving, huh?
No, I wouldn't take it on him. I think it's just the way life is. But I learned a lot from that anyway. But then after that, I got married again, which I didn't predict I would do. And this person, I was healed with cancer already. And after a while, I married this person. He's very nice. And within that, about 2 years of being married, he had Tourette syndrome. You know, Tourette syndrome is like when there's voice tics or muscle tics, movement tics, where it would jerk like that, or and or save cuss words, like the F word and stuff like. And in the Philippines, we're not supposed to curse. My mom would slap us if we will ever curse. No, and now I'm living with a guy who does, you know, something that I really don't like to hear. But I was able to care for him because I cared for myself while I was having cancer, and I knew how it is to have a disease. Now, this is the last thing. My mom had a bout of dementia, you know, early onset dementia, when my aunts were there visiting her. And they were wondering why she's getting a jacket to go out. And they asked her, where are you going? And I said, oh, my sisters, I have to... be with my sisters. I said, they said, we are your sisters. No, you're not. You know, and we all panicked, you see? Because she was a caregiver. We don't know how to care for her. So, but she had a good, like group of nurses and doctors and caregivers around her, because I'm in Dallas, she's in LA. And we survived that. And now, we realized that it was not really dementia, that she was having UTI at that time. Urinary tract infection. And they said that that can be, that is the most common cause of having that kind of dementia. And so she's back to herself now. And that's my story. It's just that we really have to take care of our health physically, and our mental health is foremost. Because when I was having cancer, what I hung on to is a self-forgiveness list. I forgave myself for my fears and everything else, because I realized words are like microchips. And as we go through life, we gather all this information, and our brain can only handle so much. So that then we have to release them. It's just like defragmenting your computer. Yeah. So, yeah.
Wow. So what did the doctors say when you healed yourself? I mean, I can imagine.
When I told them that I don't like to have chemo or radiation, you can just imagine their reaction. Sure. It's just like...
Suicide.
It's suicide because that's their profession. How can you just say no to what I'm saying, you know? And me, for me too, it was for me suicide too because I don't know where I'm going at that time. But it was the clarity within me that I know my body cannot handle it.
Wow. And the inner voice.
Yeah. But what assisted in that?
Yeah. Let me interrupt you 1 second. Adrian, I wanted to, you're relating to all of this, I'm sure. When you lost your husband, what type of feelings and emotions did you go through? Were you, you know, like I described, just trying to figure out your identity or anything, or was it different for you? We cannot hear you. Did you mute yourself on your little, there's a button, a mute button on you.
Is that?
There you go.
Yeah. Okay.
Sometimes I mistakenly do that too.
No, I didn't experience that. I allowed myself to have anticipatory grief.
Explain people what that is if they don't know.
Well, knowing that eventually he was going to succumb to the cancer. They had told us this is the kind of cancer that goes away, but then it comes back. It always comes back. It's amazing how many different kinds of cancer there are. He was diagnosed with stage 1A lung cancer. So, I mean, he had lots of surgeries, and then he was fine for a while. But we were waiting for it to come back. And when I, you know, when you hear the cancer diagnosis, very often you just feel it's a death sentence. And
yeah,
because his was qualified and they told us it would come back, I don't think that we ever let ourselves believe that he was going to lick it completely. It also wasn't his nature to adjust how he ate and do the things that might have extended his life, exercise more. Yeah. He just wanted to go on living the way that he was. No one ever knew he was sick because he looked perfectly healthy. So I had to give care to him and his mother. I accepted it. I knew where it was going. I knew that there would be a big gaping hole in my life when the two of them were no longer around.
Would you say you did more anticipatory grief than the actual grief after he died?
I'm still grieving, and it's 5 years on Saturday. But I have a very full life. I have a boyfriend. I go out. I have friends. I mean, but that doesn't mean that I don't still grieve the loss. This year. Hit the anniversary of the date of the anniversary of his death falls on the day that he died. So at the time that he died, I know that it won't be very easy for me. But interestingly enough, my boyfriend will be in town. So as he was last year on the anniversary of Steve's death. So
silver lining.
I felt that the depression that I was experiencing was normal and called for when Steve died. I didn't let myself get mired in it. I made sure that I kept busy, but I wasn't one of these people who was just keeping myself busy so I didn't feel. I let myself have feelings too.
Yeah.
I spent plenty of time alone and not going to grief support groups because I'd had so much good support. Excuse me. I'd had so much good support while I was a caregiver. while I was caregiving. But I mean, I'm a natural born caregiver.
Just like June.
I say I'm a hardwired caregiver. I can't not do it.
So who are you caring for right now?
Caregivers. That's what I'm doing. I'm caring for caregivers. The caregiver's caregiver.
Yeah.
But it's the people that don't allow themselves to feel something, that just try and bury their feelings in all the busyness they can, or television, or you know, just you need to just stop and feel and go through it, as you say, Dave.
Yeah.
You need to go through it, and grieving the loss of the person that you had as a partner or a parent. Sometimes the grieving is, if it's an Alzheimer's patient, you can be grieving the fact that my mom's not my mom anymore. You know, it's different. It's a different, it's a loss. It's a grave loss.
Any kind of loss. Mm-hmm. June, was there a grieving that you went through, and what advice can you give our caregivers who, you know, are suffering and going through that? Maybe their caregiver, their loved one didn't die yet, but they're going through what Adrian described as anticipatory grief. What advice would you share with them, June?
Just what worked for me is understanding that the definition I give to myself will be what I will live, and will determine the course of actions, whatever that will be, that I will take. So it's to redefine myself within who I am. I am not just a caregiver. I am, like my father said, you are our daughter. I am not just the daughter of my father and mom. I am here, and I'm that breath that is in this body. And wherever that breath is, it expresses itself and it stands for what is best for everyone around me. So then I have a different viewpoint about life. So that's the best advice I could give.
Well, listen, let's take another break and we'll be right back. And we have a new caller. And maybe after the break, if you like, you can call in. But don't go away.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships is a touching story about Charlene, a stroke survivor. Back in 1996, Charlene was a healthy, normal, very active 52-year-old woman whose amazing talents resembled that of both a Martha Stewart and Wonder Woman. But all that changed when she suffered a massive stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on her right side. She met her husband Dave 21 years earlier. They had a wonderful, fairy tale, storybook-like courtship that soon culminated in their marriage. Charlene had just come out of a marriage where after 10 years, she received two black eyes and a broken nose by her former husband when he came home high on speed. Charlene believed in no second chances of any kind for abuse, so she left, finding herself all alone in the world with her 5 and 10-year-old daughters, Cynthia Lorraine and Deborah Lynn. She started raising them by herself for the next 2 years. Then fate brought them all together. After falling in love with Charlene, Cindy, and Debbie, their love then produced Rebecca. They all had a wonderful, normal life for the next 20 years. But today, things are very different for everyone. One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships is the amazing story of a woman's fight to survive. To survive all that life had thrown her way. Everyone who knows Charlene is thoroughly amazed at how she lives day by day, month by month, year by year, and with a smile on her face and hope in her heart that everything is going to be okay. Her faith in God is her foundation in this hope that everything happens for a reason and what doesn't kill her will make her stronger. She inspires everyone that meets her. Best-selling author Lynn Barrington says, "If you think you have it bad, read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story from the heart. It is inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light." 9-time Grammy and Dove Award recipient, the godfather of contemporary gospel music, Andre Crouch, says, Charlene just won't let the promises of God go, and she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror. As the Bible states, you will be encouraged by her testimony, regardless of what you're going through. Order your copy today from the author's website, onearmoneleg100words.com. And Dave and Charlene will personally autograph your copy. Enjoy.
And we're back with Adrian Gruberg of the Caregiver Space and our call-in guest, June. So
I did make an ebook, and then I also assisted myself to lose some weight and did a 21-day investigation of my weight and what food I eat. Now I realize that the food that I'm giving the elderly is actually the food that we need. So we were so we pity them, the old people, whenever they just eat this tasteless food. And we try to make it nice for them, but we shouldn't really, because we are the ones that really has to learn from them. Yeah. Because I just found out in my 21-day investigation, mm-hmm, that taste is at the heart of our sugar addiction, and that if we will just tone down the taste, we will be able to tone down our use of sugar. It's the portions, not the sugar. And that's another story, I mean, Dave. So,
yeah, you know, it's amazing. So many caregivers are in poor health because they don't eat right, they don't rest right, they don't exercise right.
Right.
So there's a great future in what you're doing, because caregivers need to know how to take care of themselves. And the problem is they don't know how.
Right. And I have working on a recipe book. Maybe Adrian, maybe I'll send you a copy of that.
When Steve and Syl were going through their cancer, they lived on bagels and tuna fish and chocolate chip cookies.
Well, that sounds healthy.
Yeah. And no matter how much I told them that the starch in the bagels is, you know, becomes sugar, and cancer loves sugar, and you shouldn't be eating the sugar, nothing could sway them. Unfortunately, I started eating bagels and chocolate chip cookies too, which I no longer do. Sugar and anything white is out of my diet at this point. So, except I guess there must be some white fruits, like apples are white inside. So,
tell us what you ate when you went to lunch with me, Adrian.
What did I have when I ate?
I'm trying to remember.
I had a salad and let myself have bacon, which I never do.
It was a cheat day. And we're allowed to cheat once in a while, aren't we?
Yeah, but
especially
with
bacon.
With bacon, yes, but I really don't cheat with sugar and starch that often.
Yes, and I just took this blood test, you know, because I have a herniated disc, and so I went, and I have arthritis in my feet, my toes, and so I went to this arthritis doctor, and he made me take this test, and he says, this will tell you all the foods that you are sensitive to that cause inflammation.
Right.
My God, I can't eat gluten, I can't eat dairy, I can't eat eggs, sugar, soy, almond, flax, garlic. I mean, that just cuts out all the foods that I love. Pizza, forget it. So I'm on 5 days now of doing this. I have the pain hasn't gone away yet, but I'm going to give it a month or so.
Yes.
I hope that's enough time, because why should I sacrifice if I'm not feeling the benefits of it? What benefits should I be feeling, Adrian?
Well, I mean, once the swelling goes down, you should get some relief. I mean, I certainly know that since I've been eating properly, I mean, since Steve died, I'm another person physically. Yeah. I knew that if I didn't take care of my health then, When was I going to do it? I was only going to get older. I better do something now. So I took control. And the man that I date eats very properly. And it's like, well, I guess it's easier to eat the way he eats than cook for two. And
yep. Are you kind of on my diet? No gluten, no dairy?
No gluten. No. Well, I do have yogurt. I can have eggs. Like I can have almonds if I want to.
What are you giving up besides gluten?
I'm giving up all processed foods.
Processed foods. And what benefits have you noticed? Energy?
A lot more energy, but my body has changed totally.
Really? How so?
I used to be very, very bottom heavy and no matter how much weight I lost, I always had big hips. And I'm thin. I mean, I was able to lose weight where...
Oh, I see.
But it's not just important. The pressure on my knees is different. The
joints.
My joints, my back problems are much less. My health in general, my immune system is much better.
That gives me encouragement. Any comment on that, June?
Well, I was diagnosed in the middle of a healthy eating craze. What would you?
You're like that runner in the 70s. There was a runner. And he just dropped dead. Mm-hmm. And then I have a gas station. We have people who are 95 years old smoking Camel non-filters, and they're still smoking away. So it's like, where's the rhyme or reason?
I know.
It's the mind. What I found out is it starts from the mind. And when we do not control that habit that is obsessive or compulsive in a way, even if it's about health, because I was a health buff and I was obsessive, you see. I obsess over health. And if you do that, there will also be a consequence on your health because stress is not just about stressing about bad stuff. It's also stressing about good stuff. Just like if you have obsession to clean your house like 24 hours a day, it will also... So it's moderation and balance. Yeah. And what I found out now is that, as I said, the food less taste, so you will not eat a lot of it because it's the portion. I saw in my log that it's the portion that I take that matter.
Yes, I have controlled portions too.
Yeah.
I weigh everything. But I'm not compulsive about it. It's very matter of fact. You know, this is just the way I eat now.
You're right. Yeah. I also used a diabetic monitor to have a look at my blood sugar in what I eat. So let's say for a week, I would test my blood sugar every time I eat so that I know how much of this is needed. Like I can eat a cake this much. And that will still stabilize my blood sugar. It will not go up or down, you see. Wow. So it's not the cake, really. It is that portion that I need. And a chocolate, just one square. I tested that. It was not from someone else telling me, hey. Because, see, the doctors and the scientists, if they tell you they researched about this group of people, you have a different DNA makeup. So don't compare yourself to this guy. Walk your own process. That's what I say.
So it's a combination of things. Cancer-fighting foods. You stay away from all of the bad stuff. And it's the mind. Keep the bad stuff out of your mind. Mm-hmm. And it's exercise, which both of you ladies are prime examples of magnificently fit ladies. The doctors, they just couldn't believe. Did they ask you what you did and you know, were you put in a medical journal as a miracle or anything like that?
No, they wouldn't do that because
of course not.
Everyone will say, I refuse chemotherapy and radiation, what they're gonna do, how they're gonna earn their money. No, it's a no.
So what was their explanation? Did they have one?
No,
they were scratching their head.
They were surprised. Actually,
surprised.
This doctor who operated on me, after my operation, it was breast cancer, right? So he's palpating my breast because I actually had surgery. But he's palpating my breast, and I said, "Doctor, what are you doing?" He said, "After a week, this is supposed to come back." So, and because I did not have chemo or radiation, he's actually expecting it there, you see. And I said, "Oh my," you know. And when I said to him, "I don't want chemo or radiation," he actually told me a story. He said, a warning. He said, "June, if you don't do this, you know what will happen to you?" I said, "No, doctor, please tell me." And he said, "Your breast will grow and all the worms will be there. And your parents will not be able to visit you in the hospice because you will stink." And I said, "Really?" I still stand by my decision.
Did he say worms? Worms?
Yes, yes. And I was so scared of worms.
I didn't know worms came with cancer. Did you know that?
Huh?
I didn't know worms came with cancer.
No, they said in that.
Was he a Filipino doctor?
No. He's a white guy. But I investigated later because all these stories, I want to know if this is true, no? In the medical literature, there is such a thing. And it's good that I didn't know that. And because if I know that, I will get into fear and I will be driven by this fear rather than just being commonsensical about the whole thing.
So how can we get a hold of both of you? Adrian, how would someone want to get a hold of you who's listening to the video cast on the show?
Well, you could reach me at Adrian, ADRIENNE. At thecaregiverspace.org.
We should also type that in for those, because when they're listening, they can just hit the click. I'll do it for you.
I don't know how to. Yeah. And the thing on the right, thecaregiverspace.org website is up and very, very vital. And it's got good vitality, good people writing for it. And you can also find this on Facebook. But it's free. There's no advertising. It's just a place where you can come for emotional support. And it is what it was meant.
Yeah. June, how can someone get hold of you?
That's my email right there. June equals.
Say it as well.
Oh, there it is.
June, EQUALS. June equals. Email. Do you have a website?
That one at the top.
Okay. And I'll put mine in here, caregiverscaregiver.com. And that's a one place to shop for everything. Oh, it didn't come out. Caregiverscaregiver.com. Caregiverscaregiver.com. Hopefully I didn't misspell anything. It looks pretty good. So thank you again, Adrian. Thanks for
coming on.
As usual, we love you. We appreciate you so much. And June, thanks for calling in. We appreciate that.
Thank you.
Come in. Tune in any Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific and 4 p.m. Eastern and 3 p.m. Central and 2 p.m. Mountain. And we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Caregivers Caregiver Radio Program with Dave Nassani. Join Dave each Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific or catch the program anytime 24/7 right here on HealthStar Worldwide.